GoDaddy.com. Use the code POD139, that's POD139, for 10% off GoDaddy hosting. GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1135, August 12, 2009.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from someplace called Harrell Ford, Missouri. Or actually, I guess according to the GPS, I'm about 4 miles from there. I'm at a truck stop along Interstate 44, about, partway across Missouri, that has been here for many years. And so that's, but it's close to some place called Harrell Ford, Missouri. And so anyway, I spent the night last night at that service plaza up there at DeKalb, Illinois. Then late this morning, I went to the place. Turned out to be a candy place, but they had I don't know, whatever it was I got, some kind of packaging or something. And that load turned out, it was already loaded and it was a drop and hook. So got out of there about noon, left DeKalb, Illinois about noon, met a driver down at Troy, Illinois, and swapped out with him. The load that I picked up in DeKalb, Illinois is delivering to Fort Worth, Texas, whereas the load that I swapped out for delivers Wednesday afternoon at Fort Smith, Arkansas, which is about 45 miles from where I live at. And let me just check this real quick to make sure. Yeah, delivers in Fort Smith at 3 p.m. So that should work out okay. So in any case, if everything works out, I should be getting home probably late afternoon, and so that should work out okay. Now my parents are actually leaving in the morning, because my dad's, one of his sisters is, suddenly has kind of taken, she's gone downhill pretty quick, and she's kind of really taken ill, and it's looking like that, she's not going to be around much longer. And so my parents are making the trip up there to visit her. I think they moved her into a rest home or some sort of a nursing home. And in the recent past couple of months, she's really been failing. Now it's kind of interesting. She did come to the family reunion that we had. It was like a month or two ago, a couple of months ago. She did come to that, and she was sort of, she was there and she was eating and what have you, but she really wasn't very aware. She didn't seem, I'm sure there's they have words for that, the different states that especially elderly people get in, but she just really seemed like she was kind of in a fog almost. but kind of non-responsive, you know, just not really too much aware of her environment. But she apparently has really gone downhill since then. So my parents are going to go see her. So they may, you know, I may still be home whenever they come back, or they may end up deciding to make a trip out of it and go somewhere else. You know, they could, you know, I think they're taking their small motorhome. I think that's what they're going to do. I think that's what the plan is. So, you know, so they'll, unless they go in a motel, I don't know if they could do that too, but I just don't see them doing that. You know, so, but who knows, they may, you know, make a little vacation out of it. So, but in any case, I should be home sometime Wednesday, late Wednesday afternoon. What I'm going to do, I've got chapter 5 of that Russian textbook on psychopolitics. And so I'm going to go ahead and play that and be back afterwards to wrap up. Chapter 7, Anatomy of Stimulus Response Mechanisms of Man. Man is a stimulus response animal. His entire reasoning capabilities, even his ethics and morals, depend on stimulus response machinery. This has long been demonstrated by such Russians as Pavlov, and the principles have long been used in handling the recalcitrant, in training children, and bringing about a state of optimum behavior on the part of a population. Having no independent will of his own, man is easily handled by stimulus response mechanisms. It is only necessary to install a stimulus into the mental anatomy of man to have that stimulus reactivate and respond any time an exterior command source calls it into being. The mechanism of stimulus response are easily understood. The body takes pictures of every action in the environment around an individual. When the environment includes brutality, terror, shock, and other such activities, the mental image picture gained contains in itself all the ingredients of the environment. If the individual himself was injured during that moment, the injury itself will remanifest when called upon to respond by an exterior command source. As an example of this, if an individual is beaten and is told during this the entirety of the beating that he must obey certain officials, he will, in the future, feel the beginnings of the pain the moment he begins to disobey. The installed pain itself reacts as a policeman, for the experience of the individual demonstrates to him that he cannot combat and will receive pain from certain officials. The mind can become very complex in its stimulus response, as easily demonstrated in hypnotism, an entire chain of commands having to do with a great many complex actions can be beaten, shocked, or terrorized into a mind, and will there lie dormant until called into action by some similarity in the circumstances of the environment to the incident of punishment. The response mechanism need only be reminded of some small part of the stimulus to call into view the mental image picture and cause the body to remember the pain connected with the incident of punishment. But so long as the individual obeys the picture or follows the commands of the stimulus implantation, he is free from pain. The behavior of children is regulated in this fashion in every civilized country. The father, finding himself unable to bring about immediate obedience and training on the part of his child, resorts to physical violence, and after administering punishment of a physical nature to the child on several occasions, is gratified to experience complete obedience on the part of the child each time the father speaks. In that parents are wont to be lenient with their children, they seldom administer sufficient punishment to bring about optimum obedience. The ability of the organism to withstand punishment is great. Complete and implicit response can be gained only by stimuli sufficiently brutal to injure the organism. The Cossack method of breaking wild horses is a good example. The horse will not restrain itself or take any of its rider's commands. The rider, wishing to break it, mounts and smashes a flask of strong vodka between the horse's ears. The horse, struck to its knees, its eyes filled with alcohol, mistaking the dampness for blood, instantly and thereafter gives its attention to the rider, and never needs further breaking. Difficulty in breaking horses is occasioned only when light punishments are administered. You often hear some mawkish sentimentality about breaking the spirit, but what you want to hear is an obedient horse, and sufficient brutality brings about an obedient horse. The stimulus response mechanisms of the body are such that the pain and the command subdivide so as to counter each other. The mental image picture of the punishment will not become effective upon the individual unless the command content is disobeyed. It is pointed out in many early Russian writings, for this is a survival mechanism. It has already been well and thoroughly used in the survival of communism. It is only necessary to deliver into the organism a sufficient stimulus to gain an adequate response. So long as the organism obeys the stimulus wherever it is re-stimulated in the future, it does not suffer from the pain of the stimulus, but should it disobey the command content of the stimulus reacts to punish the individual. Thus, we have an optimum circumstance and one of the basic principles of psychopolitics. A sufficiently installed stimulus will thereafter remain as a police mechanism within the individual to cause him to follow the commands and directions given to him. Should he fail to follow these commands and directions, the stimulus mechanism will go into action. As the commands are there with the moment of duress, the commands themselves never need be repeated, and if the individual were to depart thousands of miles away from the psychopolitical operative, he will still obey the psychopolitical operative or himself become extremely ill and in agony. These principles, refined from the earliest days of Pavlov by constant and continuous Russian development, have at last become of enormous use to us in our conquest. Less modern and well-informed countries of Earth, lacking this mechanism, fail to understand it, and coaxed into somnolence by our own psychopolitical operatives, who discount and disclaim it, cannot avoid succumbing to it. The body is less able to resist a stimulus if it has insufficient food and is weary. Therefore, it is necessary to administer all such stimuli to individuals when their ability to resist has been reduced by privation and exhaustion. Refusal to let them sleep over many days or denying them adequate food produces an optimum state for the receipt of a stimulus. If the person is then given an electrical shock and is told while the shock is in action that he must obey and do certain things, he has no choice but to do them or to re-experience, because of his mental image picture of it, the electric shock. This highly scientific and intensely workable mechanism cannot be overestimated in the practice of psychopolitics. Drugging the individual produces an artificial exhaustion, and if he is drugged or shocked and beaten and given a string of commands, his loyalty can definitely rearranged. This is PhD, or pain drug hypnosis. The psychopolitical operative in training should be thoroughly versed in the subject of hypnotism and post-hypnotic suggestion. He should pay particular attention to the forgetter mechanism aspect of hypnotism, which is to say, implantation in the unconscious mind. He should note particularly that a person given a command in an hypnotic state and then told when still in that condition to forget it will execute it on a stimulus response signal in the environment after he is awakened from his hypnotic trance. Having mastered these details fully, he should be, by practicing upon criminals and prisoners or inmates available to him, produce the hypnotic trance by drugs and drive home post-hypnotic suggestions by pain administered to the drugged person. He should then study the reactions of the person when awakened and should give him the stimulus response signal, which would throw into action the commands given while the subject was in a drug state of duress. By much practice, he can then learn the threshold dosages of various drugs and the amount of duress in terms of electric shock or additional drug shock necessary to produce the optimum obedience to the commands. He should also satisfy himself that there is no possible method known to man. There must be no possible method known to man of bringing the patient into awareness of what has happened to him, keeping him in a state of obedience and response while ignorant of its cause. Using criminals and prisoners, the psychopolitical operative in training should then experiment with duress in the absence of privation, administering electric shocks, beatings, and terror-inducing tactics accompanied by the same mechanisms as those employed in hypnotism, and watch the conduct of the person when no longer under duress. The operatives in training should carefully remark those who show a tendency to protest so that he may recognize possible recovery of memory and of the commands implanted. Purely for his own education, he should then satisfy himself as to the efficacy of brain surgery in disabling the non-responsive prisoner. The boldness of the psychopolitical operative can be increased markedly by permitting back into society persons who have been given pain drug hypnosis and who have demonstrated symptoms of rebelling or reinstalling themselves in society, if only to observe how the label of insanity continues to discredit and discount the statements of such persons. Exercises in bringing about insanity, seizures at will, simply by demonstrating a signal to persons upon whom pain drug hypnosis has been used, and exercises in making the seizures come about through talking to certain persons in certain places and times should also be used. Brain surgery, as developed in Russia, should also be practiced by the psychopolitical operative in trainings to give him full confidence in 1) the crudeness with which it can be done, 2) the certainty of erasure of the stimulus response mechanism itself, 3) the production of imbecility, idiocy, and discoordination on the part of the patient, and 4) the comparative lack of comment or public indignation occasioned by casualties in brain surgery. Exercises in sexual attack on patients should be practiced by the psychopolitical operative to demonstrate the inability of the patient under pain drug hypnosis to recall the attack that has indoctrinated him with lust for further sexual activity. Sex in all animals is a powerful motivator, and no less so in the animal man. The occasioning of sexual liaison between females of a target family and well-chosen males under the control of the psychopolitical operative must be demonstrated to be possible with complete security for the psychopolitical operative, thus putting into his hands an excellent weapon for the breaking down of familial relations and consequent public disgrace for the psychopolitical target. Just as a dog can be trained, so can a man be trained. Just as a horse can be trained, so can a man be trained. Sexual lust, masochism, and any other desirable perversion can be induced by pain, drug, hypnosis, and the techniques of psychopolitics. The changes of loyalties, allegiances, and sources of command can be occasioned easily by psychopolitical techniques, and these should be practiced and understood by the psychopolitical operative before he begins to tamper with psychopolitical targets of any magnitude or importance. The actual simplicity of the subject of pain, drug, hypnosis, the use of electrical shock, drugs, and sanity producing injections and other materials should be masked entirely by technical nomenclature, by the insistence on future benefits to the patient, and by an authoritarian pose and position, and by a careful cultivation and acquisition of governmental positions in the country to be conquered. Although the psychopolitical operative working in universities where he can direct curricula of psychology classes is often tempted to teach some of the principles of psychopolitics to the susceptible students of the psychology classes, he is enjoined not to do so. He must limit his variations on the teaching of psychology to transmitting the tenets of communism under the guise of psychology, and do so in a way that will cause the students to accept communist tenets as their own idea or as modern scientific thinking. The psychological operative must not at any time educate students thoroughly in stimulus response mechanisms, and must not impart to them, save those who are to become his fellow workers, the exact principles of psychopolitics. It is not necessary to do, and it is dangerous. Okay, so that was chapter 7. And we've got a number of more chapters to go, but I don't have time tonight. Should be able to get to more of them over the next few episodes. And then I think once I've kind of gone through the entire thing, then probably we'll come back and discuss different parts of it. Because there's, you know, keep in mind, this was written in the 1930s. This was an actual Russian textbook, and they were teaching their operatives basically how to take over another country, specifically kind of take over the United States. And, you know, you can say, well, they didn't succeed, but they made some pretty serious inroads. And, you know, and it's kind of ironic, the Soviet Union, you know, because they only had part of the equation. You know, they've got the godless part. You know, they're atheists. The people that were behind the Soviet Union were atheists. You know, they believed that, you know, there was no God and that man was just an animal, and therefore, you know, they didn't have a conscience. They could just take control. And, of course, the Soviet Union ended up kind of falling apart, and in large part because of Ronald Reagan, you know. But they ended up falling apart because they only had half of the equation. They didn't have the God part of it. So, but nonetheless, the part that they had was pretty good. But as what I started to say, it was ironic. You know, it fell apart. The Soviet Union fell apart. Communism kind of fell apart, but the irony is there are still people in our own country that are still trying to work towards it, and there are still people that are trying to push it, even though it's a failed system. But the impetus behind that, it's not that they love communism so much, is that these people hate God. You know, the people that love communism and love the government, they're trying to create their own God, and because they hate God at their very core, they hate God. They hate the idea that there's a creator. and they're trying to create their own god in the form of government. And of course, it's something that cannot be. So anyway, it's once I've kind of read through the entire thing, then all the chapters, then I'll probably come back and kind of talk about different parts of it. But it's really fascinating stuff, and as I say, they only had half the equation, but the half that they had it's some pretty serious stuff. And a lot of the myths that they talk about trying to perpetuate to kind of cover their tracks, we believe today, which is pretty. And some of the other things, how they're talking about how to work their way into different parts of this, and different positions and what have you, and what myths to put forward. Look around, and we've got that going on today, which is also pretty interesting. So anyhow, hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.